Boar's Head invites you to enlighten your senses. Introducing Boar's Head Ichiban Teriyaki Style Chicken. Inspired by Japanese master chefs, our signature teriyaki glaze is crafted with garlic, ginger, and a hint of brown sugar. Then paired with our tender, slow-roasted chicken breast for a flavor that's sweet, savory, remarkably bold. Boar's Head Ichiban Teriyaki Style Chicken. The bold flavor of Japan. Now at the deli. Compromise elsewhere.
The following episode has been recorded in advance of tonight's broadcast. Welcome. You're listening to Mark My Words here on the Life Coach Radio Network. I'm Mark Shaw, broadcasting from New York City. I'm a certified life and business coach, and twice per month I host Mark My Words, which is a life coaching-oriented show where I interview various people with inspiring life stories of overcoming adversity. I also speak with authors of great coaching-related books and programs, as well as many others who have great things to say, and I sometimes coach listeners who call in live on the air. So tune in the first and third Sunday of every month. Tonight is another coaching hour, and we already have some callers in the queue, so we're going to jump right in and get started with some coaching here on Mark My Words.
Our first caller for this evening, who's already waiting on the line, is Lucia. Lucia, thank you for calling Mark My Words.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Certainly, certainly. So what can I help you with this evening?
Well, I wanted to bring up the subject of something I've been dealing with for a while. And I'm 28 years old right now, and I'm happily married, and married with a wonderful husband who I know he loves me, and he's constantly reminding me how beautiful I am and how much he loves me, yet, which I appreciate so much, and it makes, you know, an amazing difference in the quality of our marriage. However, I've noticed, and it's come to my attention, that it seems like I still seek a lot of validation from my physical beauty, with, you know, from other people, specifically other men. And I am actually very self-conscious about my body due to certain history, dealing with a brain stroke a few years, and when I was little, abuse and another condition I currently have with PCOS. Very difficult hormonal imbalances that cause a lot of annoying symptoms for women. So all that little package together, you know, obviously causes a lot of, you know, little insecurities physically, and causes a lot of self-consciousness. But it seems that still, because I deal with that, I've noticed that I tend to explore those moments where I feel attractive by someone else, and it's not that I actively seek that attention, but I respond to that attention, and, you know, it's something that I would want to be able to come to a place where I don't need that, or I'm not responding to it, and, you know, fair, not just for my husband, but also, you know, I want to be able to be happy and comfortable with myself, that I don't necessarily need that external, you know, attention and validation from men.
Okay, great. So first of all, thank you for sharing that. I think it takes a lot of courage to be vulnerable in the way that you're allowing yourself to be, to share to share some of that stuff. So thank you for that. So what I'm hearing is that you have some insecurities around your appearance, weight, some stuff related to a stroke and other sorts of concerns that you've had in the past. That contribute to having some stuff going on about your appearance, and that you're constantly, or to a large degree, maybe is an easier way of saying it, seeking, or not seeking. You said you don't actively seek the external validation, but when it comes, you respond to it, and that you wish you wouldn't. You wish you didn't feel the need for it.
Correct.
Great. And you also said that you're that in terms of your marriage, this is really not an issue because you know that your husband sees you as beautiful and attractive and wonderful and desirable, and there's no notable insecurities there.
Right, and yeah, that seems to not be enough.
Right, and it seems to not be enough
yeah.
for you. Okay,
yeah.
So let me ask you a question, Lucia. You said how you mentioned how you respond when men show you attention that's based on your appearance, other men. Tell me what you mean by respond.
Good question. And also to clarify a little bit, not just responding to the physical attributes that I mentioned or whatnot. It's overall how certain friends that've known me for a while or that we had certain history or whatnot use all of it, the previous relationship or the previous history with the personality and then the constant, you know, how beautiful you are. If you were next to me, I would hug you, or stuff like that. That kind of get me that sense of, you know, well, I'm still wanted or desired by this person, and, you know, why does it mean so much to me? But respond in a way that, in some cases, maintaining that relationship, that probably wouldn't be best for me to maintain that kind of relationship or that kind of communication or language.
Mm-hmm.
On, you know, thank you, you too, you know, I miss you too, and I miss mama too. Or constantly, you know, posting a, you know, show me a picture. It's like, oh my gosh, you look so great right now, and this and that, and responding to that language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is that still present? You know, I don't really need it. Why is that important to me to maintain that kind of language and relationship and communication?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say that it wouldn't be good to continue that
mm-hmm.
kind of relationship. Are you saying it wouldn't be good to continue that particular relationship or just that way of interacting inside of that relationship?
Mainly that kind of reacting to the relationship. I don't think it's a harmful relationship, especially, you know, the
okay.
few people that happens, people that usually it's not where I live. It's not people around me directly.
Right, gotcha.
You know, but even
people,
so, like a few friends around me that compliment, oh, they look at me in a way that, as a girl, you know how they're looking at you, you know, that sense of desire, or they give you a special look, and not necessarily to respond that, but to like it, and, you know, instead of, okay, I'm going to walk this way now.
Right. So you're
yeah.
talking about, by responding, it sounds like you're talking about the internal response that you have.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. How much of an external response is there, too? Because you talk about, you know, then you walk a little bit differently. What I get the sense of is that I get the feeling that you might subtly respond externally with some kind of flirtatious behavior.
Yeah, it could happen. And in the moment, I might not be conscious of it because
mm-hmm.
it's part of my personality. And this, my husband knows that. And I've told him from the beginning, I tend to be flirtatious, but not in the pose that I'm going to jump to the guy's arms or touch him or any way, but, you know, the smile, the gesture, the hair, you know, or just making sure I look extra nice for a special event
right.
or encounter or something, you know?
And how much is your husband aware of the struggle that you're sharing with me right now? How much is he aware of that struggle?
Actually, we had a conversation about, I want to say a month, month and a half ago, where... And it came out a lot from talking about a situation that he's dealing with, that he struggles with. And by talking about how that's affecting me, this came up. And I told him, you know, I sort of confessed, I understand, I don't know if you've noticed or not, but I feel like this going on, and I don't want it to be like that. And if you ever notice it and it hurts you, you know, I'm sorry, I want to apologize, but I'm trying to work on this. And he completely supported me and was very, he acknowledged me and, you know, showed me a lot of responsive love.
So you're in this together?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You sound like you're married to quite a good man.
Yeah, quite good communication, that's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. So you said that he struggles with something and somehow, I guess, his behavior in whatever that struggle is, it
mm-hmm.
plays directly into the insecurities you have about your appearance.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So So great. What I really love is the awareness that you have, the self-awareness that you have. It sounds pretty high level. What I also like is the communication that you and your husband have, because what makes this, what could make this a lot worse, right, is if you didn't have that kind of communication. It would just add a whole other layer that's very difficult. Yeah, so it's really wonderful that you have that with him. So let me ask you this, Lucio. What's the belief that you have in life that generates the need that you identify for this kind of attention?
It's in the not good enough family for sure. I guess an internal need to prove that I'm more than just a pretty face, and the deep desire to feel love, attracted, and accepted by everyone because of my internal struggle that I have a hard time accepting myself, and that I'm pretty enough, that I'm healthy enough, that I'm desirable enough. That's what I can pinpoint.
Okay, great. So it's an I'm not good enough, I'm not healthy enough, I'm not desirable enough, I'm not pretty enough. Mm-hmm. That's the belief system, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And where would you say that comes from? I mean, I know you shared with me a little bit about your health history and things like that have contributed to it. Bottom line that for me, though, now and at this point in the conversation, where does that come from?
Well, a lot of it is since I was a child. I did went through sexual abuse when I was 5 by a young teenage boy, which apparently had affected me so much that I repressed it. And in a retreat from church, all those memories came out when I was like 16. And, you know, found that, oh my gosh, I did go through sexual abuse. I never knew this. And I found that a lot of what that ruse cost. Then 3 years growing up, I did have episode of molestation by cousins, female and male, which eventually led to cause some confusion in my sexuality in my early 20s.
Sure.
And then dealing with this PCOS thing since I was a teenager, a lot of the symptoms are external with, you know, skin, hair, all those things, weight. And then when I mentioned that, I think it's that easy to mention in public, but I think it's very common. A lot of men deal with it, and maybe it's good for them to know the impact they can have in their partners. But one of the things that may contribute to this is my husband has been dealing with pornography for many years, which is completely opposite that behavior to the person he really is. He's the most loving, compassionate, sweet. He's a man that honestly in every other area of his life lives with integrity. And then he acknowledges that he feels like that's what takes over. It's really not him. And he's very frustrated with that with himself. And based on that conversation we had recently about how the ways of death that it's affected me to look for validation somewhere else, what I don't feel replaced, it's led him to seek help. And thankfully now he's getting a lot of help with that. Mm-hmm. So all of that in combination, I think, feeds that negative belief that I'm not good enough.
Right. So it sounds like there's this underlying response to his pornography addiction, would you call it?
Yeah, in part. Not in all, because I don't know if that wasn't there, if this wouldn't be a problem. Because I know it's a hard problem. Yeah.
Right.
But it can maybe contributing, because it makes me frustrated and hurt. And more comfortable with being okay with responding to other guys.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. So there's an underlying response to the pornography addiction that kind of reinforces what's going on for you. And that, well, if I was desirable enough, he wouldn't need that. Is that what's going on for you in there?
Yes.
Even though,
yes.
Yeah. And even though you might know consciously that's mm-hmm. not true, right?
Yeah.
Underneath somewhere, there's something that's getting triggered in there that has that seem
right.
to be the case anyway, right? So mm-hmm. let me ask you something. What after you discovered at your church retreat that there was the sexual assault,
mm-hmm.
And then after the subsequent molestation that you talked about,
yeah.
what kind of professional help did you seek to deal with that?
I did go to counseling. Actually, one of the counselors in church was a psychologist as well.
Okay.
And that helped, but because what came out of the retreat was so, like, the way that I was able to deal with it was so powerful. You know, it didn't leave a trail of problems. I felt like I was able to deal with it rather quickly. And, you know, I think the main core of healing did happen. But, you know, obviously it always leaves some seeds of, you know, the root of the issues and insecurities and stuff. But, I mean, I feel like I can speak comfortable about it now and not seem like it's something that directly has affected me. But it's part of history, which is why I
sure.
mentioned it. It's more the recent situations that I feel maybe I haven't dealt with completely. I mean, the stroke was just 4 years ago, so that's very recent. The PCOS is something I'm still under treatment and still trying to get under control. The, you know, the same with my husband, it's something that seemed to be a lot better when we got married and just got worse for a couple of years. So it's the more recent stuff that has been impacting this more.
Yeah. So how long ago was it that you went for the counseling?
I was a teenager, so maybe 12, 15 years ago, something like that.
Okay. So, you know, I'm no expert in the effects of sexual trauma and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I am somewhat aware of is the possibility of things happening later on in our lives that can reactivate the trauma or at least
mm-hmm.
bring up parts of it, right? So I'm curious. You said when you were molested as a teenager, was that before or after the counseling that you had after the church retreat?
Before.
That was before. Okay, so
yeah.
The counseling dealt with all that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and, you know, I'm just wondering, and I'm not even, this isn't something that I even think you might know the answer to, but I'll just put it out there just because I wonder about it as I listen to you, is how much of dealing with your husband's pornography addiction might be somewhat reactivating some of that stuff for you in a way that might make some more counseling, even if it's just short term,
mm-hmm.
really helpful and valuable for you.
Yeah, it's hard to relate the feelings. I see there were different feelings involved. For example, the only feeling I can remember from the instance when the abuse actually happened in the moment was shame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know that I didn't do anything wrong. I just knew that I was part of something that was very wrong. This couldn't be right.
Mm-hmm.
And when the little brother, he had taken me to the closet to do whatever he wanted to do, and his little brother found us and opened the closet door, and he kind of just left me half naked on the floor, and he ran away after his brother saying, "I'm going to kill you if you say anything." And I felt discovered in something very bad, and I felt shame. That was the first feeling I remember. But then a complete blackout. I don't remember anything. All the feelings I felt about that was after that memory came up and I had to deal with it, which was just, you know, hurt, abandonment, unsafety. You know, that's my big father of gremlins and unsafe. You know, a lot of things I realized the trigger that you're not safe. You know, if you're not loved enough, you're not accepted, desired enough, you're not safe. You know, because
mm-hmm.
I went through so many issues of not being safe, like the stroke, the abuse, the, you know, the health issues. It's you're just not safe. But when it comes to this with the pronouns and all that, it's more of a feeling of replacement, you know, or not good enough in that intimate level.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, counseling might, yeah, definitely would help.
Yeah, you know, that's what my gut is telling me here. You know, mm-hmm. that's one of the things that is important as a coach is to be able to recognize when there are issues that are coming up for somebody mm-hmm. that I'm coaching that might be more appropriate for therapy mm-hmm. and other forms of counseling that are more in the mental health realm.
Right.
And, you know, and I mean, I have a master's in counseling, you know, and stuff. So I feel comfortable when those things come up. Yet at the same time, I also don't have the specific training to deal with those particular issues. So I would be remiss if I didn't recommend that you check out that possibility and let, mm-hmm. you know, a real qualified professional who really knows how to take care of you in this regard, who mm-hmm. has the training and the expertise, to make the determination if you need any more of that kind of care or not.
Mm-hmm.
You may or you may not. You know, I don't know. But that's somebody who would be able to make that determination more accurately
right.
in a way that's, you know, safer for you.
Yeah.
You know. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I honestly haven't thought it would come to that.
mm-hmm.
But it would, you know, it is something I would consider if I do want to get to the true depth of the situation and make for a healthier quality of relationship between both of us. Yeah, you can see how that can help, definitely. Although I do believe there's a lot of wonderful coaching skills that can also help.
Yeah, and, you know, it might be a matter of, I know sometimes I have clients that are also in therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes it's a matter of you can be doing both, you know, both of those mm-hmm. different kinds of work at the same time. You know, I kind of feel like sometimes it's about, you know, it's analogous to when you have a health concern and you don't know mm-hmm. if it's serious or not and you might want to do a holistic remedy, right?
Yeah.
But what some people do is they'll first go to the medical doctor just to get evaluated and just get more information about what they're dealing with before they make the determination, you know, to go medical or holistic, both of which
right.
are very valuable modalities, right?
Right.
You know, so I feel like before you make a decision about coaching around something like this or not, that you also mm-hmm. get that other piece of information so that you're making the most conscious decision you can.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
yeah, I'll definitely consider that.
Great. And again, I also want to just reinforce for you that I think the courage that you have in dealing with this, in with all of this, the openness, the ease with which you talk about it, I think shows some real strength that's enormously valuable in moving through this and getting to where you ultimately want to get with it. And, you know, and I can also see, you know, you talked about how you moved powerfully through it when you worked with the counselor at the church. And I suspect that your ease of talking about it is reflective of that. You know?
Yeah, I do feel I've been through a lot of inner healing process, and you know the biggest thing for learning to forgive was the biggest,
mm-hmm.
and I think that brings so much freedom, and being more open to forgive and considering all the options and you know moving through, and also had a huge chunk of training through that after the stroke, recovering from being completely disabled and blind and. Just a complete mess to fighting through getting my life back, pretty much. So I try not to let the little things get to me too much because I've been through a lot worse. And, you know, but you always strive for getting better at any area. So this is one of those.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, working through stuff around recovering from a stroke and being completely disabled, I mean, that in and of itself is just monumental for anyone to have to deal with in their life. You know, and then, of course, you know, what do they say in the coaching world? What doesn't kill us makes a great seminar story. Right?
So, that's completely true, yeah.
You know, you certainly have a great inspiring story to share with people, perhaps, who are also going through similar things, you know, stroke rehab and stuff like that, who feel like their lives are never going to get better. You know, so.
And that's my hope, to be able to work with survivors as a coach in the future. To help them, you know, get that confidence and desire to, you know, accomplish great things in life, which might be a feeling you give up for a while when you're recovering. So I always strive to get better in that myself. And I do want to mention that one of the things I think that's kept us so strong despite difficulties in my marriage, my husband was, we met a month before I had the stroke. And, you know, my husband has been through it from the very beginning, all the way through it with me, and stuck by myself. So, you know, just to show a little bit of, you know, the heart that he has and the strength that he's given me. I want to be almost the pillar of motivation for me to literally want to live, because at some point I want to die. And he was a big motivation for me to get through it and fight through it and get better, because he had faith in me, so I wanted to have faith in myself. And so we've been through too much to let things like this get, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it sounds like you've got a really amazingly strong relationship, and that you're married to quite a good man. So so great. So what do you think is your biggest insight as we bring this to a wrap up? What do you think? What's your biggest insight from this conversation? Your biggest takeaway.
The biggest takeaway is that the more I talk about it, the more I realize I tend to be a very loving, forgiving, compassionate person. Not to boast about it. It's just a natural, more of like that motherly love with people. And I realize I don't give the same kind of mercy to myself in a lot of things. And that I do need to learn to see myself with that love and acceptance and mercy that, you know, God has for me and other people around me have for me, and stop, you know, focusing more on the validation and the love I get from God and my husband more than, you know, the people around me that just whatever they say makes them feel good about themselves, you know, based on my response.
Great. Yeah. Well, great, Lucia. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being so open with me, with our listeners. I wish you the best of luck, and feel free to keep me posted through Facebook and whatever on how that goes for you. If you would like a counseling or therapy referral, I can also see what I could do to find you somebody as well.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it, and I hope that this help someone out there in a similar situation, or maybe with their same inner struggles that motivated them. And thank you so much for your acceptance and your non-judgments through the whole call, and for just being such a great coach with me.
Well, you're so welcome, Lucia. My pleasure. So thank you again for calling in to Mark My Words, and have a great night.
You too.
Mark My Words is happy to be sponsored by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. They have more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now. And if you sign up at our URL, which is audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio, you'll get one free audiobook and a one-month trial of the service. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And there are some great titles that relate even to tonight's topic. Titles like Dream Year, Make the Leap from a Job You Hate to a Life You Love, written by Ben Arment and narrated by Sean Pratt. Somewhere along your road to adulthood, you pushed your dreams to the side. You had to pay bills. You feared taking a risk on yourself, and so you settled into an unfulfilling and perhaps even unpleasant career. Well, if it's any comfort, you're far from alone. 66% of Americans hate their jobs. But what if someone could guide you step by step as you identify, plan, and launch your dream career in just 1 year? Well, that's what Ben Arment does in his transformative coaching class, which has helped hundreds of people reinvent their lives to enjoy greater enthusiasm and fulfillment while also making a living. Now he's sharing his best insights, advice, and inspiring true stories in Dream Year. You'll find out how people just like you are discovering or rediscovering what they were truly born to do, and then following a proven process to make it real. And then there's Healing Your Inner Child and Yourself for Life, your guide to happiness, healing your heart's wounds, and loving yourself when you don't know how, written by Veronica Bond and narrated by Amanda Smith. Learn the most effective way to heal your inner child and reconnect with your true self today. Pick this little book up and you'll never put yourself down again. Maybe you suffer from emotional pain, or perhaps you feel wounded, deep inside, isolated, like no one understands how much you suffer. Well, in this audiobook, you'll learn how to find your lost inner child, how to heal your emotional pain and suffering, key steps in recovering and healing your self-esteem, how to avoid being codependent, and much more. Healing Your Inner Child and Yourself for Life is a cut-to-the-chase, practical guide, the perfect choice for anyone who suffers severe emotional pain and feels all alone. Hopelessness and despair no longer have to be your heart's dwelling place. And now, back to Mark My Words with certified life and business coach, Mark Shaw.
And we're back here for the second half of Mark My Words. And we've got another caller on the line. So we've got Bridget. Hi, Bridget. Thank you for calling Mark My Words.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am feeling fantastic today. Thank you.
Well, great. I'm glad to hear it. So thanks for being a listener and thanks for calling in. What can I help you with this evening?
So I am calling you at a very exciting place in my life. I have waited forever, it feels like, so over a decade, to finally pull the trigger on my lifelong dream of start going full-time as a coach. So I have been completely enthralled in a relationship that I call my with who I call my pimp, which is my corporate job.
I love
and
that.
Lovingly,
that's great.
Lovingly refer to it as my pimp because it is taking great care of me. I mean, everything from the car to the credit cards, just all the perks that come with some corporate jobs. And I hope it's
lovingly, just in case they're listening to the show.
So lovingly. There's been no slaps or anything like that. It's a loving, loving relationship.
Great.
So you can call it my mama or my daddy instead of a pimp, maybe, so that it doesn't have that negative connotation to it.
You're leaving the nest.
Yeah, I am. I'm leaving the nest, and I gave my resignation yesterday. And part of me is like, yes, finally, here we go. And part of me is like, oh, crap. So I thought, you know, I need to get coached around making it happen, overcoming the oh, crap feeling, and just getting a little bit of footing under me for the next few months.
Okay, great. So first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a huge, huge leap. Tell me how it feels to have done that. I mean, I hear all the excitement and the joy in your voice, right? So tell me how it feels.
Oh, yesterday, so I did it yesterday, and the buildup was just intense. Like, my stomach was in knots for a week because I really do love who I work with. They're really, truly friends at this point and family. And so I didn't want to let them down, but when I blurted those words out that I am announcing my resignation, I just felt like doves just started flying, and I felt 50 pounds lighter in that moment. It was so amazing, to be able to finally utter those words out loud that I've been plodding around and making plans and provisions for. It just felt really freeing.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about, in the big picture, why is it important to you to have taken that leap?
Oh, gosh. Well, one of the main reasons is my philosophy with regards to my coaching practice and the people that I work with is that you as a coach cannot take your clients any further than you're willing to go, personally. And I have quite a few clients who are entrepreneurial and that I, you know, am an encouraging coach to them around what they can do and what their capabilities are. And on some levels, I felt like I was a bit of a fraud because here I am straddling the fence, you know, with diffused energy and not really that honoring my values as far as coaching fully. I wanted to play full out so that I can encourage my clients to play full out, and so that I can engage with people that are willing to play full out because I embody that. So that's one of the bigger reasons for it. And really, it's just been one of my dreams and goals to own my days and own my life and create the life that I desire, working for myself and serving clients and helping them tap into their power.
Great. So really what I'm hearing there is that this is kind of like a step that you feel you need to take in doing your own work as a coach, which is about, you know, taking leaps of faith, taking risks, and making commitments to what you want in your life, and that's kind of like what you need to be doing as in your own life as a coach if you're going to be coaching your clients to do the same.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, very good. So, tell me a little bit about the feelings of, you said something like, "Oh God, what did I do?" or "Oh crap." Right. What? tell me a little bit about that part of it.
You know, one thing I've learned about myself is that I value security. I value certainty and security, and so that is actually what had me holding on so long was the security of the paycheck 2 times a month, and so on and so forth. And so while I worked out a plan to make this happen, and this has been in the makings for months now. It's not that I woke up yesterday and decided to do it on the fly. While that is the case, there's a part of me that is fearing, what did I do? Because I just let go of a secure, certain job. It fed my certainty. It fed my need for certainty.
Right.
And I'm hopping willingly into a place of uncertainty.
Right, so it's the risk of the uncertainty and whatnot that has
you
a little fearful. How would you rate your level of fear on a scale of 1 to 10? 1 being there's no fear at all, and 10 is like I'm paralyzed.
Well, my scale is a little sliding from day to day and sometimes moment to moment. At this moment right now, I am about a 3 to a 4.
Okay, and what's the range that you fluctuate around?
Oh, I've been living at a 10 for years, mm-hmm. and then sliding down this last past year that I've been investing in my own coaching to eradicate myself of that paralyzing fear.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say I toggle between the 3-4 that I'm at right now to a 8.
Okay, so since you resigned, you've toggled, you've ranged from 3 to 8. You kind of back and forth there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because
okay.
I start to get in my head when I'm at an 8 around,
sure.
Okay, now what do I do? And I start panicking, and I start calculating numbers and doing different things to try to figure life out.
Yeah, exactly. So certainly. And that makes sense. I mean, look, the leap that you took, you know, it's an enormous leap, and it's an exciting one, and it's a fearful one. You know, it's a terrifying one. It's kind of like jumping out of a plane, you know, to go skydiving. Right, it's like it's the most amazing thrill, and it also probably has the same "what did I just do? I hope I don't die" moment.
Yes, totally.
It, right, you know. So okay, very cool. And what's the excitement level on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh my gosh, it's a 10. 10, 10,
yeah.
10.
Great. So you got a level 10 excitement, and your fear ranges from 3 to 8. Okay. So, So tell me, what would you like to have happen as an outcome of our coaching conversation today?
I would love to be able to feel more consistently a 4 or less on my fear scale.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because I feel like the fear... Go ahead.
Well, what would have to happen in order for you to consistently be at a 4?
For me to consistently be at a 4, I feel like I would need to be taking consistent action to fill my practice and to fill my funnel and to do all of the projects that I'm working on that will begin to create a level of certainty with regards to the income coming from my practice.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, great. great. So it's about being in action and taking consistent actions to fill your practice and your roster of clients. So how do you feel about taking that kind of action?
I feel great about it. I'm very action-oriented, and I like to constantly be doing things. What makes me slide to an 8, kind of going more towards the paralyzation, what it looked like before was not leaving my corporate job. Now that that's in motion, what that looks like is stalling and procrastinating and playing on Facebook instead of doing what I need to be doing mm-hmm. with regard to my practice to growing it. So I think that's where my eight, that's how my 8 manifests itself.
Okay, so it sounds like that answers my next question, which was going to be what might get in your way at taking that kind of consistent action. And it sounds like you're saying procrastination and dilly-dallying are two things.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What else?
I would say, starting things and not finishing them. I'm great at, I have a million and one ideas. Mm-hmm. And so I'll start something and not finish it, or I'll hop around, right? So instead of saying, today I'm going to work on this for 2 hours, as I'm starting to work on option A, let's say it's a retreat, as I'm working on it, my mind will start spinning to something else, and then I'll hop to that other thing, never really finishing
right. So
that project,
shiny object
even
approach.
Move it forward.
You take the shiny object approach.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with that. Very familiar with that myself. Okay, so let me ask you this. When it comes to procrastinating, putting off, not finishing, dilly-dallying on Facebook, what's underneath those behaviors? What's underneath it that's driving those behaviors? Like, what are the thoughts that are going on in the moment that you're doing that?
I'm thinking, this will never work. Or what if I get no response to this? I'm afraid that this is going to be a failure, or I'm afraid that this is going to be more work than I'm willing to do on this. Mm-hmm. Or I sometimes feel like I don't know what I'm doing.
Okay. So the thoughts that are there are like, this will never work. What if I don't get any clients, right? And then you said that you feel fearful when that happens. That's when the fear starts.
Yeah. Right?
And then what is it that you do when you're thinking and feeling that stuff? You procrastinate.
I procrastinate, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, of course, when you're thinking things like, this isn't going to work and, I'm not going to get enough clients, well, of course you're going to feel fearful, right, and then procrastinate. So that's normal. So I'm curious what difference it would make for you if you had a different set of thoughts and feelings around it.
I think it would make a huge difference.
It would make a huge difference?
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh, okay. So what would a new thought be that you can replace the ones that you just shared with when they come up?
Ooh. I never really thought about it like that. I could possibly replace it with, this is the best idea ever. I can't mm-hmm. wait to finish it and see how it turns out.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my gosh, all the people are going to be clamoring to get to these things.
Okay.
This is going to be everything I thought it would be and more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. If you were thinking those things, how would that feel?
Just even saying it or taking my brain to that place is making me feel so light. And, like, I can almost picture myself just typing away happily on my computer, listening to music and, working through it to just keep the creation going.
Yeah. Yeah, so even just saying it now, playing it out when it's not actually happening, sounds like it creates a bit of a shift in you.
Yeah, totally. It really does. Like, I'm just like, oh, wow. Like, I pictured myself before just taking something and putting it to the side and kind of it's a almost like a grudgeful feeling going through creating because it may or may not work and da da da. But now thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing, and having that excitement around it, it really does shift.
Yeah.
My energy. Yeah.
So if you were thinking this is the greatest idea and people are going to be like clamoring at the door for me and you're feeling so much lighter and motivated, what would you then do?
Oh, so much. I would happily finish what I start I would be so excited to share it. Like,
yeah.
Look what I'm working on. Here's what I've got, like, you know, because I talk to so many people about my concepts and what I'm curating and putting together, and I want to be able to deliver on those things and not be one of those people that just talks. And
sure.
So getting stuck in those modes. Yeah, I would totally
sharing. It's very exciting for you, I'm hearing. Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
Excellent. So what's the first thing? The first thing that you would do, you said there's a lot that you can do once you kind of have that shift, right? What's the very first thing you would do that maybe you've been putting off the most?
I would create an outline for my fourth quarter project. So I'm going to focus on a certain niche of people, namely women that are dealing with overwhelm in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And all of my products are going to align with that niche market and who I want to reach. So it can range everywhere from one-on-one coaching to a retreat that I'm offering that's going to aid women that are facing overwhelm and want to find a sense of peace and balance in their lives. And the one thing I need to get done that would feed all of those things and the marketing of all of those things is to create an outline of who I want to focus on, how I want to do the marketing, and, you know, pick dates for certain things. But if I had my framework for what it would look like, that would set everything else in motion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're saying you would actually set up your framework.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the first step that you can take to begin setting that up? Like something that you can do this week.
I can just kind of jot it down, like, you know, excuse me, jot down all my points, like who I'm going to serve,
mm-hmm.
what problem I'm solving,
mm-hmm.
how I'm going to solve that, and then what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, that's kind of the framework. You just
talk
me through it.
And that
yeah.
sounds like that's the beginnings of a business and marketing plan.
Yeah.
Right? So that's great. So tell me, when do you want to complete that initial little draft outline by?
You know, I want to do that before I head off on vacation Thursday. I can totally do that
okay.
by tomorrow. Yeah.
Excellent. How would you feel about sending me a note, Facebook, email me to let me know that you've done it?
I'll totally do that, yes.
Ah, cool. Excellent. Very good. And I'm wondering, too, what it would be like if you were to maybe have some of those new thought statements printed out where you can see them when you're working so that way they're there and they're ready for you to go when the gremlins start coming up and all those other thoughts start creeping in. It'd be easier for you to shift to the new thoughts. How helpful would something like that be?
That would be phenomenal. I have notes and thoughts and words and phrases hanging all around my house as it is, and they do wonders for me. So that would be great to add those new thoughts where I could see them.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So when do you want to do that by and let me know?
Tomorrow it is.
Tomorrow as well. Very
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. Or actually, I can do those tonight. I can write because I like to write those on blank sheets of paper with my Sharpie.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Good.
Yeah.
Good. So, yeah, and, you know, and let me also just acknowledge, I mean, it's so normal when starting a new venture to feel fear from time to time. So I think it's important that you not beat yourself up when the fear shows up and just, you know, acknowledge it. It's normal. It's totally normal. To be conscious of it is really the key. So when you start feeling the fear, to have that sort of be a trigger for you, to go, oh, time to shift to the new thoughts, and then they'll be there in front of you, right? And you just get up, say them out loud, and then take the next action with excitement, with the excitement and enthusiasm that I'm hearing just like overflowing from you, you know, as you speak about putting it out there and discussing it with other people.
Totally. I never even thought about, you know, the conscious shifting of the thinking, you know, in that moment. You know, it's kind of like I feel those feelings, I think those thoughts, and I just tumble into the procrastination. I absolutely love that idea of saying, no, this is amazing what you're creating. Because when I do talk to people about it verbally, they are excited about what I'm creating. You know, it's only those times where I'm alone actually creating it that I do hear those gremlins. So I love that. I really, really do.
That's great. That's great. And how much of a team of people do you have around you to keep motivating you and inspiring you on a daily basis?
Oh, I got a good team. I have an awesome tribe in different places. Yeah,
that's great because, you know, relying on them could be really, really helpful. You know, somebody to call when you need to shift and can't, you know, if that happens. And it sounds like you've got quite a tribe, as you said, to be able to do that. So
I do, yeah. I'm super excited about that. I've kind of assembled them in the last year, which is the timing's been awesome. And, yeah, I will even more so now that I've launched out on this journey and, you know, resigned from my job, that they will be on speed dial as I hit these moments of fear out of, you know, when I'm out, now that I'm out of my comfort zone.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, very good. Well, you know, I'll tell you, Bridget, I could tell you're an awesome coach. You're going to be an awesome coach. Your energy, your enthusiasm, your fire for life really says all that to me. So I think that's great. And you've got people out there waiting to work with you.
They're clamoring.
They're pounding on the door, but they don't even know it yet. You just have to go find them.
I do. Thank you so much, Mark. That's awesome, and I appreciate your kind words and reinforcement. I am beyond excited, and this conversation has been such a perfect place to boost. And I almost feel like it's like medicine that I'm taking preemptively for when I do hit those moments where I'm like, what did I do? Okay, wait. Uh-huh. Remember, here's what I'm doing. Let me consciously shift into a different thought. So thank you.
Great. Well, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. Glad I can help. I look forward to hearing the updates. And thank you so much for calling into the show tonight, Bridget.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Well, that about wraps it up for tonight, as I invite you to mark your words if you'd like. If you have feedback about the show, just go to markmywordsradio.com and scroll down to the feedback link. If you'd like to follow the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, just visit us at www.blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network and then click on the follow button. Also, visit our website at www.lifecoachradionetworks.com and learn about all of our networks. I hope you enjoyed the past hour and that you found it engaging, enlightening, and stimulating. You can listen to Mark My Words live on the first and third Sundays of every month at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, as well as listen to any previous show from my archives at markmywordsradio.com and on iTunes by searching Mark My Words. I look forward to speaking with you all again next time. Thank you for listening to Mark My Words. I'm Mark, and those are my words. Good night.
Progressive presents Mindflowness with Flo.
Close your eyes and give thanks for the many things the universe has given you. The many discounts. Safe driver. Multi-car. Paperless. You are a richer person for these things. No, seriously, you're richer. Check your wallet.
You're getting deeper and deeper into saving money with Progressive. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Boar's Head invites you to enlighten your senses. Introducing Boar's Head Ichiban Teriyaki Style Chicken. Inspired by Japanese master chefs, our signature teriyaki glaze is crafted with garlic, ginger, and a hint of brown sugar. Then paired with our tender, slow-roasted chicken breast for a flavor that's sweet, savory, remarkably bold. Boar's Head Ichiban Teriyaki Style Chicken. The bold flavor of Japan. Now at the deli. Compromise elsewhere.